When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Dealing with pests can be a pain, but relax, Terminix can help.
Because when pests show up, so does Terminix.
With over 95 years of experience, they have what it takes to take on any pest problem fast.
If your home or business has pests, don't stress it.
Terminix it.
Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today.
That's TERMINIX.com.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count for your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Alexis, codename Doc Holliday Jackson. Most importantly, you are you, you are here, and that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. It's the top of the week. We want to thank everybody who has written in on our previous Strange News segment, where we looked at the possible catastrophes awaiting airlines. We looked at suspicious deaths in Pakistan. We looked at a COVID takeover of a town in California. Now we're shifting to something different. We've got some stories on the forefront of cloning science. We've got some disturbing stories from our neck of the woods here in Georgia, the state, not the country for now. And we also have a little bit of a car stuff story. And Matt, Noel, you guys know that I've been pretty excited about this one. Anytime we get a chance to look at the world of automotives, I'm usually all about it. Maybe the best way in is to say this, and this is something all our fellow conspiracy realists who have been trying to buy or sell a car are very well aware of right now. The three of us are car owners. And I think we all have quite nice cars. We are also probably not going to try to buy new cars in the immediate future because the world supply chains have absolutely, you know, they mess with every industry, and used cars especially are at a premium now. So much so that if you have leased a car and your lease has expires this year, you probably should just buy it outright from the dealer and then go sell it to another dealer, because the price of used cars has gone up like 35% or something. It's nuts. And with this first story, I predict that the value of used cars is only going to increase. We did an episode years back, many moons ago, about the idea of Big Brother being in a person's automobile. Do you guys remember that one?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, the idea of like potential, you know, hack points, even like to control a car that has too much digital guts.
Yeah. And the kind of the standard thing that many automobile insurance companies as well as manufacturers are doing, where those two entities are working together to monitor what's happening inside the car and all the systems, and then how that translates to, you know, how safe of a driver you are, and then how much you have to pay for your insurance.
This is just a tiny little addition, but like there was a story recently about how apparently Teslas can like automatically order themselves replacement parts.
Like, yeah,
that's taking things a step far, in my opinion. I mean, I guess there are some people that just have enough money in the bank that they're good with that scenario, and it keeps them from having to think about it. But someone who maybe isn't aware of that feature and saved all their pennies to get their Tesla, and then all of a sudden has like a giant, you know, credit card statement because of some expensive part, that might not be so great.
Yeah, agreed. And that's a real thing, too. Here's something that has shaken up the car world. This story first hit earlier this month in January, but I wanted to save it until we had a little bit more visibility, aka until I could read the actual language of this bill. So, you know, we're in divisive times. Every political party is looking for reasons to, you know, criticize or attack their political opponents. And this story recently became the newest front for that acrimonious conversation. Here's the headline. In a few years, if you buy a new car in the US, you are also going to be under incredibly advanced surveillance. The idea is that any new car made after 2024 or so, 2026, I think, is going to be required to have advanced AI monitoring of the driver. Now, we talked about this a little bit off air, because I'm a dog with a ball on this kind of stuff, or a badger with a bag. Yeah. But the idea is pretty simple. So let's say Codename Doc buys a new car after this thing goes into play. Then this system in this car, however vaguely defined, will monitor her driving habits. It will use algorithmic learning to understand what a normal driving day is for Doc Holliday. And then using that data it's collected, if Doc is driving in an erratic manner, or if the algorithms determine that she may be impaired somehow, the system will be able to— details are vague again, but the headline is the system will be able to kill the car, just kind of like brick it or refuse to start at all. This will remind people of, you know, I think it's every state now, but from my understanding, people who have a DWI or DUI conviction will, when they're getting their license back, they will need to use what's called an interlock device, which is basically a breathalyzer you have to blow into before if you want your car to start.
If you've seen 40-year-old Virgin, you're aware of this technology.
Yes, yes, yes. And this is interesting to me because the story got exaggerated, embellished. There was a lot of alarmism, but just like off the cuff, hearing about what you've heard so far, where are you guys at on this? Is it overreach? Is it a good safety measure? Are there problems you can see along the way?
I'm trying to link it back to the discussions we've had of property ownership in the 21st century.
Mm-hmm.
And like, is that vehicle really yours? Should you have the freedom to operate that thing if you truly own it as an object whenever you see fit, despite the laws of the land? Mm-hmm. It's a weird thing because you are definitely endangering others when you take that action, right, of driving while impaired.
Yeah, I mean, but it's also like one of these things where, you know, we are all legally bound to register our vehicles and to pay for, you know, emissions testing, depending on the city that you live in, and to, you know, make sure that your registration is up to date. I know those aren't the same as having actual mandated things within the mechanics of your vehicle, but they're not that far a jump to me, maybe. I don't know. That's just the first thing that comes to mind. I'm not saying I'm for this, but it does feel like, you know, there are things that we are required to do. We're not able to just say, nope, I can own a car and I don't have to do any of that stuff. So it could well be that as, you know, time progresses, these things become more and more common and it doesn't feel so much like a breach. But right now it kind of does, doesn't it?
Yeah. That's one of my concerns as well. So to quickly walk through it, first, let's do some old school stuff they don't want you to know. Myth busting. Let's separate fact from fiction. You're going to see a lot of reports that claim there is kill switch legislation. It is true that this idea is a law. It has passed. The idea that it could shut your car off is not quite what the bill says, but this speculation was started by an actual government representative, Representative Bob Barr here in Georgia on November 29th, 2021, started talking about this kill switch. But if you look at what the bill actually says in section 24220, it talks about regulations for what they call advanced impaired driving technology. And you can see the section of the bill online if you would like, encourage you to do so. But what it actually says is that they want this equipment to passively monitor a driver's performance such that it can identify when something is up with them. And then if they are found to be impaired, it will, quote, prevent or limit operation of the vehicle, which is kind of a kill switch. They just don't use that phrase. And then it can also detect, again, passively the blood alcohol level of a driver. What could go wrong with this? Well, there are a couple things. First is the practicality of this. The technology to do this doesn't exist yet. This is a law about a thing that people cannot build yet. Because think about like the most basic thing. Okay, let's say someone is, let's take out the moralism of drinking alcohol and driving while impaired. Let's say that someone has a medical condition, right? Maybe they have a heart attack, or they have a seizure of some sort. Or maybe they do, it's as simple as just something gets in your eye under your contact lens and you can't see. So you're driving crazy, obviously, because you can't see. How would this system be able to determine a safe place to slow down and stop? You know what I mean? Like picture you're on the interstate, you're doing 75, and that probably makes you one of the slower drivers if there's no traffic. How does this thing, without human assistance, navigate over to the side of the road and stop safely without hitting anything else? You know what I mean? Like, how does this work if you're on a bridge? There are practical problems with this. We see this a lot. Whenever large government mandates come out in the U.S., the year it's supposed to happen is almost never the year it actually happens. It feels like they're going to get to a few years down the road and they're going to say, oh, we still can't build this.
This is the fabled scenario that I don't know we've encountered before, where legislation is outpacing technology, Ben.
Whoa.
It is, but it's doing it in like the way, I just re-listened to our CEO episode, and thanks to everybody who wrote in with awesome feedback, but it reminds me of the way like business execs make proposals. They say, you know, imagine a world where elephants can fly and speak Portuguese. That's the world we're working for, and we think that we'll be there in 5 years. And everybody in the boardroom's like, yeah, sure, you're a visionary, a genius, but no one can do
this. Blue sky.
Blue sky, that's it.
But also, like, who determines the course of history in that way for such an odd flex in that direction? Right.
Yeah.
Like to me, this feels like overreach, and like there are plenty of safe alternatives to like, do we need this is my question?
Well, let me put this forward to you, because I think we maybe do need something like this. I think in the scenario you outlined, Ben, where, you know, it was the vehicle in motion and then it detects that there's something wrong with the driver. I don't think it would ever be like that. I don't think that would be able to function. Like, the driver is now impaired after they've been driving the vehicle already. I think it would be a startup sequence that the vehicle goes through every time you turn it on. The way that existing technology is, where you'd have to blow into the breathalyzer essentially to activate the vehicle. Mm-hmm. I think it would be an assessment of the driver prior to actually, you know, putting it in drive or reverse or whatever to go. That's my only way of thinking how it would function. And then I don't know. I feel like we do need that. Kind of. I hate the concept of government or some corporation being our, you know, individual nanny watching us in our behavior. But it's drunk driving is a problem.
Right, right. In just 2019, there were over 10,000 alcohol impaired driving fatalities in the U.S. It is a problem.
But is this, while drunk driving on the surface might be the reason for like pursuing this kind of technology, isn't it kind of a slippery slope argument? Whereas, I mean, is there concern for abuse of the system or of, you know, undue monitoring that really does infringe on our privacy, you know, for people that possibly behave themselves?
Yeah, possibly. It's troublingly vague. There are no details in the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, which is a gargantuan bunch of paperwork. There are no details about exactly how these mechanisms would work. There are no details about what happens to the data gathered. That's what is it? Is it a third party company? Is it selling the information about people's driving habits, essentially the metadata of you every time you're in a car? And if so, how does that get used in the future? Could it be used against you? You know what I mean? This happens with insurance data. This happens with medical information. It's a very, very sticky subject, but I don't want to have to be the bad guy here, but one thing a lot of people forget in these conversations is that nowhere, absolutely nowhere, is the ability to operate a motor vehicle considered some sort of inherent right. It is a privilege. That's why you have to do stuff like get registration. That's why you have to pass an exam. That's why you have to, you know, check in and renew your license. This means that ultimately the government, Uncle Sam, can make whatever rules they wish. If they wanted to say that now everybody who wants to drive a car has to be wearing one of those Falcon hats at all times, then they can do that. You know what I mean? You can't really stop it unless you take a case to the courts.
This isn't to say that it's not still a problem, but drunk driving fatalities are significantly down historically. I mean, since 1982, they're down 52%. But that still represents a number, I think, in according to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, 36,560 people died in traffic crashes in 2018 in the U.S., and that included an estimated 10,511 people who were killed in drunk driving crashes. That's still, a lot of people. But historically, you know, it is down because of things like, you know, Uber ride shares and all of that. Mm-hmm. And obviously with smart cars in the future, that could help reduce that even more. I question whether we need a direct line to Uncle Sam in our cars.
Right. Sometimes these kind of broad brush initiatives are more successful when private entities kind of agree to just on their own to do them. Somebody will make a lot of money here, whomever is manufacturing these devices, because it's a government mandate. They're going to reach some kind of uniformity of standard. So it's not as if you're going to have to buy an Apple breathalyzer or something, and it could only be Apple. But I share the concerns because it goes back into the right of ownership. What does ownership mean? As you said, Matt, it goes back into how much the government and associated entities should be able to know about what you do, you know, and you can spin so many different scenarios, as Jonathan Strickland over at our complaint department would say. But
mwahaha,
indeed. Yeah, that's Jonathan Strickland at iHeartRadio.com. Feel free to hit him up 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So, because it's so vague, it's something that we need to collectively keep eyes on. And we are increasingly, as a society, heading toward a world in which people are going to pay more and more for analog used vehicles. Like they're going to go up. This is not investment advice. This is just an observation. And I think it is a very safe prediction to make. The argument is this: is the government, while acting in good faith to prevent incredibly tragic deaths, are they, whether by design or by accident, opening the door to something else? That would be the slippery slope. Personally, I don't know about you guys, this this seems inevitable to me that this kind of monitoring would continue. There's too much money to be made. Lives are at stake, no matter how hyperbolic some of the reporting would be. But like, you know, when your kids start driving, Matt, Noel, wouldn't you be happy that something like this was like in their car?
Touche, Ben. Touche. I was just thinking about that the other day, about how horrifying the prospect of my kid driving around in Atlanta traffic is. I'm not like an overly worrisome person, but there's a lot at stake, you know, with your loved ones. It definitely puts it into perspective. That's a really good point, Ben. When you put it like that, and I think in my mind of what it's going to be like when my kid turns 16 and is driving around, I want every safeguard possible in place. So surveil away, I guess, government. You got me there, Ben.
Well, and it's weird to think, because you're not talking about just the car surveilling your daughter or me, you know, in my case, the car surveilling my son. It's surveilling every person
yes.
they will encounter on the road. And, you know, it's the thing you always talk about, Ben. We always take a gamble because of these, what is it? The lines that we all decided
you're not supposed
to cross.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. To recap, how silly will it be to explain to future historians? We used to hop in these machines that could go in excess of 100 miles an hour. And if they hit each other, it would be a guaranteed disaster. And a lot of people died, not just every year, but every week. And then they say, well, how did everybody continue driving in this madhouse? And you say, well, we painted these lines. And these lines,
some of them are solid, some of them are dotted. You know, they mean different things.
We got some.
Some of the paint's degraded.
Yeah.
When it rains, you can't really see them.
Everything's all shiny. Can we just go with like some Tron-esque kind of laser lanes? You know, that'd be cool. Let's spend our R&D money on that technology.
Yeah. Let's also. Mm. I think I mentioned this too. Let's also have some more positive road signs. You know, all the road signs you see, at least in the U.S. the vast majority of them are things that you shouldn't do. Wrong way.
Yeah.
No exit. No left turn. The only slightly positive road sign in the U.S. is keep going or something like that.
You can do it.
Right. So we need more of those.
Guys, I just thought of something and I feel like it totally applies. My vehicle has this feature where it detects whether or not I'm in the center of the lane.
Yep. Okay.
And it also has auto steering enabled so that if it detects that I'm not in the middle of the lane, it will steer the vehicle for me momentarily to get me back in the middle of the lane.
Doesn't that feel jarring when that happens?
Now, well, yes. And here's the problem. In our fair city of Atlanta, there are many places where roads have, you know, had lanes going a certain way, especially on high speed areas like highways where they've been repainted or, you know, they've been moved slightly in order for construction to occur on one side of the highway and maintain, you know, the lanes on the other sides. So frequently when I'm on the highway going, you know, between 55 and 70 miles per hour, my vehicle thinks I'm not in the right lane because of the way the lines are painted and the way they shift. And it tries to steer me into the next lane. And I have to prevent an accident by holding on to my steering wheel and counter-turning. Now, imagine that kind of system where the vehicle believes it understands what's happening on the road, but it's wrong. So it makes an auto correction. And in what if it's in the case that you're, you know, describing here, Ben, where it could literally shut your machine off?
How many more accidents could this technology cause when not operating correctly than it prevents?
And add to that, everything can be hacked. On that ominous note, we're going to pause for a word from our sponsors, and we are going to return with more strange news during the break. If we'd love to hear if you have any experience in this industry, we'd love to hear your take on what the greater good is here and whether Uncle Sam can actually pull it off. 1-833-STD-WYTK, conspiracydieheartradio.com, and stay tuned. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel.
Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
So tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. It's a literal pro, and it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having pink lady apple, berry lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah. Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
And we're back with another maybe lower stakes but equally creepy view into the future, dare I say more even in the present for this one. We know the technology for cloning has existed for, you know, some time. We've got, you know, Dolly the sheep and all that. Mm-hmm. It's certainly not as simple as like a cloning machine where you just step inside and then all of a sudden like a laser shoots into another identical cloning machine and then another version of you walks out, you know, fully formed. That is not how that works. It requires a lot of trial and error. It's very expensive and can take many years to clone. And that's even today with, you know, the advances in technology. And like any expensive technology, it's finally found its way into the hands of social media influencers, which is always fun. Specifically, something called Petfluencers, which I guess there's every kind of fluencer you can imagine. Mm-hmm. There's pet influencers. These are folks whose bread and butter is to, you know, pose on Instagram with their pets and like lifestyle kind of pet, you know, related stuff.
Is that like example, Grumpy Cat?
Well, that would be a little different, I think. So these are a little more specifically like, you know, they're like social media influencers who pose with their pets a lot. Grumpy Cat's sort of its own thing. I don't know if that would count as a pet influencer. I think the pet influencer is the person, and then the pet is like part of that kind of duo.
So it's not like a vanity account just for the pet, like Loki.
No, these are typically like folks that are all about their life with their, you know, mm-hmm. furry friend. Like Udvar Hazy, for example, who's a 29-year-old petfluencer who has recently used a company out of Texas called Viagen to clone her dog, Willow. You may have heard of Viagen in the past. They made the news when they created a clone of Barbara Streisand's dog, Samantha, back in 2018. Through this process, Udvar Hazy ended up with a clone of Willow by the name of Phoenix, plus five other completely identically genetical puppies that she was able to give away to her friends. And she says that they have little look-alike get-togethers or whatever. There's a really cool article on Input about this with the very clever headline, "Bring in the clones. Instagrammers are genetically replicating their pets." So here's the deal. Wander with Willow is the name of Udvar Hazy's Instagram account. There, you know, Ben, you make a good point. There is kind of a blurry line between whether it's, you know, exclusively for the animal, or if it's more of kind of like a joint account. It does seem like a lot of the pictures on this account are the dog, but they post together quite a bit too. It's definitely more of a lifestyle thing than like a kooky pet, you know, like, Grumpy Cat or Bingus, if anyone is familiar with the hairless, I believe Siamese cat Bingus, who's very memeable. My kid is obsessed, and I find it a little bit disturbing.
Yeah, hairless cats freak me out, man. I'm sure they're
just too pink. Yeah, it's too pink, and they just look like something's wrong. This one's pink.
I'm partially colorblind. So.
Oh, that's right. Yes,
to me, it looks like chicken skin. It's like when we saw the pictures of plucked ostriches. It's
100% not a great look. So this is becoming a thing. This is really like kind of picking up steam. Tinkerbell, who was a 5-pound papatisse, who had more than 500,000 followers on Instagram. The owner of the team, I guess this pet has a team, revealed that in 2019, Tinkerbell's DNA was being collected and stored for potential cloning. Another account, I love the name of, I Party with Bruce Wayne, which has 55,000 followers. This one is all about this group of cloned Chihuahuas. And there's pictures of them all in like holiday sweaters, like all sitting together, and they are indeed identical. This probably goes without saying, but I just want to say it anyway. When you clone an animal, it's not like you're reincarnating it. You know, like right. If your animal has died and you've saved this material and you go through the process of creating the clone, it's almost more akin to like in vitro fertilization than it is some sort of magical, you know, like reproduction process. So your pet it's going to look the same. It's going to be genetically identical, but it's not like it's all of a sudden going to have the exact same personality as your pet that passed. Mm-hmm. So Melaine Rodriguez, who is a client services manager at Viagen, makes this point. You know, just to make sure that people understand what they're getting into. She makes the point in the Input article that, you know, this is in many ways used by very wealthy people who are having a hard time coping, you know, with the loss of a pet. This is a way that many of them are able to kind of like move forward. But then she does note that the pets aren't reincarnations, like I said before, and they're going to have different personalities than the one that they were cloned from. This is very, very expensive, by the way.
Yeah.
Each clone costs between $35,000 and $50,000, and that depends a lot on the animal. And then Rodriguez describes the process like this. The eggs and the embryos are created in a dish and then transferred into the surrogate. If you ever had a wonderful pet that you love so much, it's so hard to lose them. A lot of our clients are in that situation. And as we know, a lot of Instagram influencers are quite wealthy, whether they were already wealthy. And that's sort of how they came to become Instagram influencers. That's often the case. Or many of them hustled and absolutely scrapped and earned their followership from scratch and maybe didn't come from wealth. And that's absolutely part of this, too. Kelly Anderson is another pet owner and pet influencer that is quoted in this Input article. And she's a dog trainer, and she had a cat named Chai, who she described as being her soulmate, and had a, you know, I mean, obviously many folks have incredibly close connections to their pets, and losing a pet is in many ways as painful as losing any other loved one. And she did the cloning in order to help her cope, because she actually was so distraught that she wasn't able to continue doing what she normally would do. And she is one who she says in the article that she built up her 64,000 strong followership just kind of by being scrappy and resourceful. But when her cat died, she wasn't able to continue. And that was kind of like a real problem for her.
Let me ask this, because now, not to be too much of a caricature of myself, but I'm pretty cynical with some of these cases. So I was also looking up on the Viagen website. I was reading some of their information. And at some point, for at least some of these accounts, we're talking about a business decision, at least in part. You're making your income off of this. That range of pricing is like 50 grand for a dog, 35 for a cat, which is interesting. And then there's a lot of interest in horse cloning, because that can make a ton of money. But I can see this absolutely just being a reasonable investment. I have the Petfluencer says, I have struck lightning in a bottle here, or whatever figure of speech I'm muddling. And they say, I need, Rupert Goldie Toes, or whatever their dog's name is, to live forever so that I can continue my career as a pet influencer, then I'll have Goldie Toes too. Like, I'm not saying this means they don't deeply care for their animals, but I'm saying at some point it's inseparable. Like, 500,000 followers, and it's dependent upon the popularity of an animal that will naturally expire before the human owner does.
That's right. And you could probably, even if your cloned animal doesn't have the exact same temperament or personality, a lot of this is pictures and stills and stuff. And unless your animal's known for doing some kind of wacky trick or something like that, a lot of it is just about the look of the animal. And so this is an opportunity that Viagen saw and is seizing on. Rodriguez wouldn't go into specifics, about how many pet fluencers are doing this specifically, for the business side of it. But it clearly is something that they're considering, because they go to all of these conferences. I could picture them having a booth at like a pet fluencer conference. And she asks the question, if someone made a living off of their pet and then suddenly the pet's gone, what do you do then? Apparently, this is something that very much resonated with the folks that are going to these conferences. So there's definitely that. But it also points out the article that it's not an easy process for the surrogate. And as we know, it can take many years with many, trials and errors. So I don't know what that means. If that means that some of these attempts are like failing, or that they're like not. Is this something where you could potentially generate, a clone that then dies, or is in some way genetically unstable and has some sort of horrible condition, is in pain? Like, how many failed attempts do you have to, go through to make a viable clone? Mm-hmm. And do those failed attempts involve pain for the animals? I don't know. And if anyone out there is in genetics and knows a little more about that, I'm interested, because they don't talk about that. This isn't something, they don't really tell you how the sausage is made exactly.
Right.
So I've got to wonder, if some of these aren't viable and it takes that long, how many, and I'm not trying to be macabre about it, but it makes me think of like, body horror sci-fi type stuff like Cronenberg, where you maybe have like some sort of monstrosity or something, like that maybe is in some way, like in pain and shouldn't exist. I don't know if that's the case, and I'm sorry if I'm being alarmist or extreme. Where my imagination's going, but I have to imagine that's a possibility, because
it clearly is.
All I know is that the fine folks at Viagen, whatever it is, they're asking for roughly the annual salary of most of us to make a clone of a pet.
Right. It's like more expensive than some very high-end cars. It's what people make in a year. That also, that number doesn't count sales tax, which further, the expense makes me further convinced that in many cases, this is a business move. I think there's something else that's really dangerous about this that people haven't talked about. And I know some of us listening today are thinking the exact same thing. Is this so different from cloning a deceased loved one or human relative? Currently, I don't know whether this is good news or bad news to everybody, but currently it is illegal to quote, knowingly clone people. So you could make a case, if you're somehow a geneticist, you could make a case where you say, Your Honor, was I upset about the death of my human loved one? Yes. But I did not know I was making a clone. I clearly am smart enough to do it. And this new person is alive. But it was my bad. It was an accident. Like, how does that hold up in court? I mean, people would question. Do it, though, if it was legal, right? Like, if Viagen could clone humans legally, why not do it? Some other business would.
But do they, I don't understand, like, they would have to clone, like, a baby, right? I mean, it would be an embryo, and you have to go through the whole life cycle to get the person back to the age that you remembered them, and it would be a whole nother life. It's not like you can't clone their brain. I mean, you can't clone their fully formed memories and their brain and all that. I mean, there's so much weird Black Mirror rabbit holing to do with that scenario. With animals, mm-hmm. it's a little different, but it's not that different. Not to mention something that Input points out that I really agree with is that this is kind of, you could argue, pretty decadent when there are, you know, 6.5 roughly million animals in shelters. You mm-hmm. know, mm-hmm. why not just carry on the memory of your beloved pet and give that love to another animal that needs a home?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you're saying that we could have another Robin Williams in like 30 years, like if we started right now, we cloned mm-hmm. him, I'll take it. Let's do it.
Yeah. That's the thing. There is some decadence. You know, while it's maybe not an expense that I myself would undergo or undertake, rather, I have a tough time telling people what to do with their own money. You know what I mean? Oh, sure. Like if you own horses, of course, you're inevitably going to consider the breeding racing business. So paying $85,000 to clone an animal that has already made you millions, that just makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know,
it makes a lot of sense in that department. You're right. Especially because, I mean, like, I think I maybe mentioned this back when I was a reporter for public radio, in Augusta where I worked, where my bureau was, we have this thing called the Futurity. It's like a big horse trading kind of like rodeo type event. And I went to an auction, you know, for breeding rights for these horses. And they literally auction off semen.
Yeah.
That, you know, came from a prized winning racehorse. So how is this any different than that? It's just like the next level of that. So that's an interesting point, Ben.
Do they use the same hats for that, or is it a different mm-hmm. kind of yeah. thing?
Yep, it's true. Yeah, the horses just rub up on people's heads, and then the hats collect the juice.
A lot of good people died. But it is an industry. And also, Noel, I fully predict this will continue to evolve. You know, it's still imperfect. We don't have much information now on, you know, maybe the non-viable embryos that are created. We don't have that much information on how far along an organism may get before it runs into some sort of problem. Like, I think it was... Oh, gosh, it was New Scientist reported a long time ago when the Dolly story was making the rounds that a lot of these animals were, like, their attrition rate was pretty high. So I think there was one, I can't remember which experiment it was, but by 800 days in after the cloning, 83% of the animals that had been cloned were dead due to one thing or another. So I would ask too, if you are a pet influencer, or you're just someone who really misses your pooch or your parakeet or your cat or whatever, I would try to do some digging to figure out what that attrition rate is and whether it will actually work. You know what I mean? And what do you do if you spend $50,000 cloning your dog, and then that little cute little puppy you receive unfortunately passes away in the night just a few months later? Do you get a refund? Do they just make a new clone? This is a really weird world we're entering.
Got to read the terms of service.
God, yeah, no, exactly. It does feel like we're entering into sort of a Gattaca-esque present and near future, no question about it, but something to keep an eye on for sure, and how far something like this can go. But in the meantime, let's take a quick break for a sponsor word, and then we'll be back with one more piece of strange news.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel.
Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
So tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. It's a literal pro, and it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah. Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
And we're back, and we are headed to Griffin, Georgia. That is in our state. It is south of the city of Atlanta, where we currently live. I don't know, guys, I would almost say middle of Georgia if Google Maps would actually function for me right now, but it's not. I know. Yeah. It's south of the city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got some contacts, guess you could call them friends, in Griffin. It's that was a shady way to say it, guys, sorry. But it's you're spot on. It's south, kind of. Think of it as like a little less than halfway between here and another town called Columbus, which is right by the Alabama-Georgia border.
That's a great way of putting it. So we're headed there for this story. It's coming to us via NBC News. I'm going to read you the headline here. Georgia pastor and wife charged with false imprisonment after people found in locked basement. Yikes. Now, yeah, if that isn't alarming, I'm not sure what's going on with you, but that certainly, those words put together are alarming to me. And when you first get into reading about this story, it does seem quite alarming, but I'm going to make the argument throughout the rest of this segment, you guys, that maybe this isn't as bad and as scary as it appears on the surface. Just going to make that argument, and we'll see.
Okay.
We'll see where it goes. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So how did this happen? Let's start there, perhaps. Well, according to this article, there was an emergency call made from a house in Griffin, Georgia. And when emergency services crews showed up, they attempted to gain access to the house and they were unable to do so. They went around to a back door, which is near the garage area of this house, and there is a door to the basement. And they could tell that the person that was in need, that the emergency crews were sent out for, was inside the basement, but it was locked. And the people inside the basement could not open the door and escape. So the emergency crews made entry via a window in that basement, found the person in need, and were able to help them. Then they determined that, oh, wait, there are a lot more people in this basement than this one person who was in need of emergency services. And I believe they found 8 people in total locked. Mm-hmm. Yes, 8 people in total locked inside the basement of this residential home. And the authorities discovered very quickly that the people who were running this house where the people were locked in the basement, it was Keith Bankston and Sophia Sim Bankston. They're a married couple and they run a church, which is called One Step of Faith, Second Chance.
Stuck out to me too. One Step of Faith, Second Chance. And also the writer in me does have to point out that they wrote out one, but they used the number sign for two, which is just, okay.
It's a bit strange.
There are bigger issues. I'm the first to say it. There are bigger issues. I just think it's a weird name.
This is what I'm trying to do, not pass judgment until we need to. Okay. So the name, I agree. I've got notes, but they've got a ministry that they run. Okay. And, it is certainly a bit strange that in this house that is associated with their ministry, there were 8 people locked in the basement. What we haven't told you yet is that all of the 8 people were either elderly, were wards of the state, had mental or physical disabilities. It was some combination of those. The ages were, I believe, between 23 and 65 of people who were kept there.
Jeez.
Almost immediately upon being found in the basement, 6 of the individuals who were down there were basically, they were made to leave that housing situation and they were put in other places. Again, many of these people were, quote, wards of the state. So they were probably put in some kind of facility. One person did choose to remain.
Have you seen the movie We Care a Lot, I believe is what it's called. It's got Peter Dinklage in it and Rosamund Pike. It's about wards of the state and like people
oh, are, God,
you know,
yes.
they take advantage of that. Because, you know, what happens when you become a ward of the state is you essentially are stripped of a lot of your civil rights or your civil liberties. You know, you are you are kind of literally what it sounds like, a ward of the state, in that you are kind of held in many ways against your will. Like you, sometimes it's a psychiatric hold that's put on you or whatever it might be, and you lose a lot of autonomy. And the film's about some very opportunistic hucksters that take advantage of the system, but it is a pretty scary place to be.
This happens to one degree or another in many other examples. What we're talking about in the legal sense would be, I guess, an unlicensed care home because they didn't have the correct paperwork or zoning. And that's one of the contentions, at least when I was watching the story earlier, that's one of the contentions I think they're going to sort out in court, right?
Yes, that is the primary issue here. They were attempting to run a facility like this for people who needed housing, but they didn't have the correct paperwork filed. They didn't have the licenses to make it happen. The weird thing is that the police department and, you know, I guess the state of Georgia, or I don't know, like maybe it's just the county that's pressing charges against this couple. They're saying that it was false imprisonment. They were keeping people imprisoned in the basement of this home. What, you know, the attorneys for the couple are saying is that no, it was not false imprisonment. It was actually them housing people who needed a place to live. And it was literally faith outreach, allowing, you know, people to stay in a place that has food, warmth, water, and all the things that a human needs. This is where it gets a little strange to me. We don't have all the information yet. We don't know if the individuals who were staying there were actually being taken advantage of financially in any way by this couple, by the Bankston couple. We don't know as of right now what all was happening to them, what type of care was being provided for them. you know, we don't have a ton of details here about whether or not the facilities were in all, you know, all in working order, if the facilities were clean or what it was like. And we don't actually know for sure, and we can't prove right now, whether people were allowed to come and go as they please, as the right. Bankstons and their attorneys have said.
Right. You just hear the sentence locked in a basement and your yeah. mind kind of goes places, you know?
Yeah, exactly. You mentioned a video about the story. You can go to 11alive.com. That's 11alive.com. And you can find the story, attorney disputes claims after pastor wife face false imprisonment charges in unlicensed group home investigation. You can hear from Mr. Wimbush, who's the attorney for this couple. Mm-hmm. And you can get a little more information on it. You can also head on over to the website, onestepoffaithministriesinc.com.
Yeah.
And you can read about the couple. You can read about what they do. And by the way, this is what I wanted to bring up, Ben. The second chance thing, the second chance part of the name, has to do with outreach they do for those who have been incarcerated. So felons who are now attempting to reenter the workplace and all basically find their way forward, they do a lot of outreach there and attempt to help people, which I think is awesome.
Yeah, noble. Yeah. And this is like, this is a nonprofit. Second Chance Program yes. Does have its nonprofit status. I do want to give a shout out to the lawyer because Bankston's lawyer's full name is Dexter Wimbush, which mm-hmm. sounds like it is from a book. It doesn't sound like a, I mean, it's just, there's something that tickles me about Dexter Wimbush. I might use that as an alias going forward. But this is true. And I love that you're pointing out we being the public, don't have all the details here. Are these people, were they truly held against their will? Was their money, they were receiving state subsidies. Were these subsidies being managed by this couple? Which that itself is not inherently bad, especially if there is some sort of like legal guardianship in play. We just don't know at this point. And I'm not, you know, I take on spirituality, religion aside, I have a policy of never knocking anybody if they're trying, sincerely trying to help other people. You know what I mean? Recidivism is just so high in the US.
100%. And a lot of these people, you know, either won't find their way to the services that they need or, you know, fall through the cracks of, you know, government services. So sometimes it is helpful or necessary for people to take steps to help these folks, you know, when they can't help themselves. There's something that strikes me just a little funny on the website in the bio for the pastor, for Curtis Bankston. It's just like it's some pretty over-the-top, self-aggrandizing language. He's described as a biblical scholar and arguably one of the greatest visionaries and orators of his generation.
Oh, you can get away with anything if you slap arguably on it. That's arguably the best point I made today.
I would agree, arguably. But I don't know. Not throwing them under the bus yet before they've had their day, but like it's that struck me a little weird. But yeah. Anyhow.
I don't disagree with you. That's a bit much. I don't know who wrote that.
I'm sure they wrote it themselves. I'm sure all the copy on here. That's when you write. Yeah, that's why like, you always like have to write your own bio.
Yeah,
it's such a tricky dance, you know. And also, you know, the mission statement on their website is bringing people to Christ through the following acts, sort of headings: feeding the hungry, clothing the naked, housing the homeless, and helping the brokenhearted find a way out through Christ. All noble pursuits, but again, very like Christ-like, you know, almost like casting this couple in this, you know, very, very holy kind of light, almost to the point of it feeling a little culty to me. I don't know.
Well, maybe who knows? Look, here's the thing. I know I'm not directly helping anyone in, you know, extreme need like that actively right now, and they may have been. So to me, that's just like until there's all the information, a headline and story like, you know, a bunch of people found in a basement because this pastor locked him up in there. That just is the kind of thing that makes me feel like that's kind of that's what we do now.
Yeah,
it's the thing that's going to get clicks.
Right.
And that's the way people are going to think about this pastor and his spouse now in the ministry, even if it's found, you know, months from now, a year from now, that no, they actually weren't. There was no false imprisonment. They just needed to get licenses.
Just the devil's advocate here. I mean, not a quote from the police report. It does say it is both frightening and disgusting to see the degree of which these individuals have been taken advantage of by people who were in a position of trust. That's in the police statement.
So, that is what the police say. I'm not saying that's wrong. We just have no context for what any of those descriptors are talking about. Like, how were they taken advantage of? What do you mean?
And that's where we get to the idea of the court of public opinion, which is tremendously, tremendously powerful. Retractions are never printed on the front page, right? And retractions are also often never covered by the news because they don't garner as much immediate visceral attention and reactions. Like, I always think this is a little bit of a different example, but a number of years ago, there was a story that was making the rounds about a person, a McDonald's customer, who sued the company for having coffee that was too hot. And late night talk shows definitely made a meal of this. The joke being a not super creative observation that coffee is often served hot, unless, you know, they say it's iced coffee. And I get it, because you got to do a show every day, so you got to have some jokes, right? But later you would find, if you bothered to look it up, that this was not a frivolous lawsuit. It just became treated as such based on the court of public opinion. So when you hear stories like this, and again, I love that you point this out, Matt, know that we are not making a judgment call here. What we're saying instead is there does need to be more information, and we're relaying to you the things that have been said already from the guy's attorney to the police, who did say they thought it was reprehensible.
And the attorney did acknowledge that they do not have that license, but that they were going to get it.
Yeah, he called it something like, this may have been in 11 Alive or it may have been in WAGA, but the attorney said the case was a, quote, zoning issue that has become criminalized.
Yep, that's exactly what they said. And we'll just have to keep a lookout. I don't know, it's a weird one to bring to the table today, guys. It's just, that headline really just stuck out to me so much that I wanted to have this discussion. And I just wonder, you, as you're, you know, listening to this and reading news every day, like, just wonder what you think when you read some of the headlines and then you delve into the story and find out what it's actually about and what you do and you don't know and just how it makes you feel. We would love to hear from
people. People don't even bother reading the below the headline, you know?
Right.
And in this case, it'd be a real disservice to everyone involved, I think.
Also, this brings up a bigger issue. It's one that I've been thinking of as an episode for Stuff They Want You to Know for a long time, which is the treatment of the elderly in this country, especially. It's very dark. You know what I mean? They're in pre-COVID, pre-staff shortages and stuff. There were some very terrible, unclean things going on. And there were also very wonderful people who were trying their best to help folks who needed help. The trouble is that authorities often have a hard time figuring out which institution is which. So this stuff doesn't have, no matter what happens with this case in Georgia, I guarantee you there are probably many other similar situations happening right now as we record.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, Ben, we should tack onto that episode those who are in need of some kind of mental health support, but that support just doesn't exist anymore or it's been taken away.
100%.
All right. So I guess that's it, guys. We would love to hear from you. If you have any information on this story, any of the ones that we talked about today, you can reach us in many different ways. You can find us all over the internet, on Twitter and Facebook. We are Conspiracy Stuff. You can also find our videos on YouTube, where we are Conspiracy Stuff. And on Instagram, we are Conspiracy Stuff Show.
But guys, wait, what if someone hates social media?
Get with the times, folks. No, I'm kidding. It's totally an understandable thing to hate. You can go old school and give us a telephone call at 1-833-STDWYTK.
Yes, and when you call in, please give yourself a cool nickname. Let us know if we can use your voice and message on the air in one of our listener mail episodes. You've got 3 minutes. Use it however you'd like. If you've got more to say than can fit in that 3 minutes, instead, consider sending us an email.
We are
Conspiracy at iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off. Starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Dealing with pests can be a pain, but relax. Terminix can help.
Because when pests show up, so does Terminix.
With over 95 years of experience, they have what it takes to take on any pest problem fast.
If your home or business has pests, don't stress it.
Terminix it.
Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today.
That's TERMINIX.com.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.